X. See, it's all right. Don't know why there's all this random furniture here. Let's see here. Slides. Paper. Paper. Slides. Here we go. Yeah, each. Okay, guys. Good for writing. We give you some time to get your papers ready for the project of the class, try to get them in good shape. And so I thought I'd kick off the thing. So I think that during this last phase of the class, we'll try to schedule more exercises. You guys write parts of your paper. Of course, you're still doing your experiments and trying to slot them into your paper. But I would like to do some exercises where we, write up a draft of parts, and then we exchange them with other students to get ideas and feedback. And so, what I'm going to actually ask you to do for next time, this Thursday, is to also so like today, you guys already, as individuals, wrote a whole bunch of introductions that you submitted to the form. That's great. I think that it's like I read them over. They're in good shape for, first drafts. It's great. People are thinking of what story they want to tell. So what I'd like to ask you to do just for Thursday is to do a similar thing, maybe as a team, to think about what your first couple sections of your paper are, your introduction and maybe the methods section where you introduce some of the technical things that you want to explain. Whether it's your methods, your data set, your model, your setting, what formulas you use, what symbols you use to talk about this and that, if you've got different users or different models, what letters you use, formulas to talk about them or whatever technical thing you want to describe in your methods section. So write, do another draft of your introduction, write your methods section, and then come and bring like five physical paper printouts. We'll try physical paper. Next time we'll see if it works. If it doesn't, we can go back to electronic. Bring a pen, and we'll literally, do some paper shuffling, where you spend some time reading somebody else's couple things, and like mark it up and say, this was confusing to me, or whatever. And so I'm hoping that that will be useful. We'll do that on Thursday. After that, we'll probably go back on Tuesday to do project presentations again. To brainstorm about ideas on the project, but I thought let's do a little bit of writing this week. That makes sense? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about writing. We'll do a little bit of this exchanging a writing exercise today, and that's what the spreadsheet's for, but we're not going to do it quite yet. But there's a spreadsheet link on the project website that you guys might have seen that we'll do. And the idea for that spreadsheet is going to be that you just randomly put your name next to one of the rows. I erased like who submitted each one, so it's all anonymous. It won't be anonymous for long, but don't put your name next to your own. That's not the point of it.
So put your name next to somebody else's thing, and then later on you'll make a minor edit to it or some suggestions, and then after you've done that, then you'll go find who it is who suggested on yours, and then you'll talk to them and they'll explain what they're thinking. That makes sense? Okay. So all right. So I have a lecture I sometimes give about how to do research. Actually, I give the first couple parts of it near the beginning of the class, which is like how to pick a problem, how to conduct experiments. And so I'm gonna talk a little bit about thoughts on writing a paper. If I have time, I'll talk about thoughts on giving a talk. If I don't have time, I'll talk about that later. But that's basically what you guys are gonna be doing for the rest of the time here. We're trying to give you some time to write a paper and a nice community to talk about it with. And then every time you guys are presenting, I want you to get better at presenting until at the end you have a pretty nice talk. Make sense? Okay. So yeah, this is a link. You can actually, it's easier to find it on the course website. But there's a spreadsheet that you can load into your thing. So how to write a technical paper. So I'm stealing this material from a talk that Bill Freeman likes to give near the end of his technical classes, sometimes before the students get into research. I really like his perspective, so I share the same ideas that he likes to teach. So he's one of my advisors, and so this is a so how important is it to write well? How important is it to like write a good paper? And you might think, oh, I don't know how important it is to write really brilliantly, but I should really avoid writing a stinker of a paper because gosh, it's embarrassing if I write a real bad one. Actually, what Bill has observed in his many decades of advising longer than me is that this is like the loss function. Okay? This is the impact of how much a paper impacts your career. As determined by how good the paper is, right? And so if you write like a really stinker of a paper, it's over here. And if you write a really brilliant paper, it's over here, right? And Bill's point is sort of funny. He's like, actually, even like if you write an okay paper, of course, it doesn't help, doesn't hurt, right? That maybe helps a little bit that you wrote a paper. It's better than nothing, right? If you write a pretty good paper, pretty good, like solid, great paper, gets through peer review, they invite you to give a poster, it's nice, right? That's a big accomplishment as a student, but his observation is, it's not even if it's much better than an okay paper, it also doesn't move the needle much. He says the thing that moves the needle is like really, really good paper, right? And so that's his advice, is that whenever you're writing a paper, you're going for that. You don't know, it's hard to hit this. It's a little bit like the lottery. A lot of things have to align, right? You have to be lucky a bit and come up with a good idea. You have to be doing well in terms of your writing. You have to execute your experiments well. It has to be at the right moment where the community is receptive to the idea. A bunch of things that sort of have to align, and then this could happen. But his point is that that this is where all the value is, and really you can think of what you're trying to do is like trying to increase your probability of writing a really good one. And that's what we're all going for every time we write a paper. Like how bad is it if you write a stinker of a paper? Well, it's not good. It might be negative. It might like somebody reads it, they might have a negative opinion of you or something like that, but not too bad. Also, like more likely people just won't read it. That makes sense. And so I don't know why, I think that why he starts off with this graph, Bill, but I think that maybe most students are too risk averse in writing papers. They're like, worried a lot about the mechanics and trying to avoid a bad one, when really they should be thinking about like, oh, how do we make it brilliant? And so maybe it goes into the writing too. So if your writing is too risk averse and it's just very wordy and you're covering your ass a lot, and you're trying to say too much, but you're not letting the brilliance come through, then you might actually be reducing the probability that you have brilliant paper just because you're afraid of not writing a bad one. That makes sense. Okay, so the other thing that he introduces with is this. He says, especially for like first year students, right? You come in and you think, now I'm an academic. And this process that I'm going to participate in is like joining the community of scholars, right? Where for thousands of years, scholars have pored over their manuscripts. And, you imagine the monks in the abbey, taking years and years to do the calligraphy and transcribe things and looking at every word and scrutinizing everything. And you think, okay, now I'm joining this long tradition of scholarly studies. And when I write my paper, you kind of imagine all the monks like crowding around the paper and saying, what word was here? And what was his? He says, this is like what, sort of what you might imagine as an outsider, that, the paper process is like. But he says, no, that's not, at least not in the 21st century. This is not how it is at all. You have this massive surplus of information out there. And so the reality is that when you create a paper and you put it out in the world, it is entering this very busy, crowded marketplace of ideas. It's more like this kind of picture. It's like a bazaar. And you're here hawking your wares. Hey, check out my 5 cent paper, right? And then people are streaming by and, most people will ignore you. And if you're lucky, somebody will say, well, just 5 cents, maybe I'll take a look at this, right? And that's the picture. Okay. And so, okay. So let's talk about what makes a good paper. Oh, Bill says, okay, Bill says, my advisor was Ted Ailsman. And this is what Ted Ailsman said. Okay, well, I don't know. What is Ted Ailsman says? So basically he says, there's a, he says, it's easy to write a good paper, said Ted. Just do four things. And if you do these four things, then you will get your paper in and through peer review. He says, since I've been following this formula, every paper I've written has been accepted since the 1960s. So I don't know if this formula still works, but I'll share it with you. He says the key thing is to do three key things, right? You have to be really clear about what the problem is and why the audience cares about it, right? So that'll kill a paper if somebody can't tell what it is that you're trying to solve in the paper. So that's absolutely the first thing. But then to be a scholar, you have to give a little context. You can't just say, hey, I'm going to solve this problem. Like that would be more of a marketing pitch. Say, like you've never seen this problem before. It's amazing, right? We're going to solve this. No, a scholar would give you a little context of like, oh, there are other solutions here, and here's where we fit in the context, and then here's what our solution is, and then so this is the meat of the paper when you explain what you've done, right? And then why it's more interesting, or why it's worth reading about, right? And then at the end, you say, you might have been hoping to hear about something else when you read your paper. Sorry, that's not what our paper is about. We'll talk about, so a little bit of related work and other things, and say there are other interesting things out there as well. They're all interesting, but they're different from our thing. Our thing is worthwhile anyway, right? So there's sort of four things you got to do that kind of protect your paper against misunderstanding and make sure that it's clear. And if you do that, says Ted Ailsen, well, I'm sure he's also a brilliant professor, right? But he, these are the key things from his point of view. So what does Bill say? Okay, so for a machine, so if you're gonna put your paper into NURBS or something, I'm just gonna share. So every field has different conventions, or what goes into a paper, and Like if you publish in Nature, then the sections and the ordering of the sections and the length of the sections and the language that they use and the style of the figures and the style of the presentation of the data and everything is different from if you like submit to ICML or NURIPS, and that's different if you submit to like a philosophy journal or something. And so, you should before you submit, you should take a look at the culture of the community that you're writing into. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you a little overview for what like a NURBS style paper looks like. So there's this machine learning community that now is so huge. It goes over ICML and ICLR and NURBS and ACL, a whole bunch of natural language conferences, a whole bunch of computer vision conferences, CGPR, robotics, and there's this massive unification of these kind of communities where they're all doing very similar work, and a lot of the papers look similar in this machine learning community. And so this is like the outline of what all the papers look like. Introduction. And then usually people have a special section for literature review, maybe called related work. And sometimes it'll be right at the beginning in the paper, and sometimes it'll be at the end, right? And then because the field is getting mature now, there's usually some background to talk about. It's an opportunity to introduce a little bit of notation, give a little context for how you're thinking about the problem in relation to everybody else. And then there's the technical explanation of what's going on, like what is the method, and then you usually have an experiment section where you convey all your empirical evidence that what you've got is interesting and worth learning about, and then you write a very, very brief conclusion section to wrap it up. That usually you don't say too much in conclusions in like NURBS. And so this is like a style of the paper that's very common, because really what the thing that puts at the center of the paper is the method, is like the method. Like this is a methods oriented paper where we're going to teach you how to do a thing. So we're going to introduce the thing and we'll spend some time talking about it and support it. Sense? And so I just you don't have to obviously read this paper, but this is an example paper. This one's from one of my students, Rohit Gandakota, erasing concepts from diffusion models. You can just kind of get a sense for what the layout of the paper is. The NURBS paper is, what's the current page limit on NURBS papers? Like 9 pages now, 8 pages, 9 pages. They've changed it recently, but it's an 8-page format. Oh, this is not NURBS. This might be CGPR. CGPR is a double column format, so they all have slightly different formats that they use. But you can see here, there's an abstract, introduction. It goes into related work, and after about a couple pages of introduction related work, now he's into the meat of the paper. He's going to introduce a bunch of notation, background, and then he gets into his method and talks about he'll teach you like what it is that he's doing there. Got some figures to describe what's going on. And then after he's described what he's doing, then there's all these experiments where he's like, okay, so how well does it actually work in practice? And he's sort of measuring everything all the way until he runs out of pages, and then he has his conclusion. See this like really short conclusion at the end, which basically says, yeah, we did what we did and we said what we said, right? And then As in typical PhD student fashion, he ends at the last millimeter of the last page of notes, right? So, which is, if you've ever done peer review, you'll notice if somebody rushed a paper and they're like halfway down the last page or something, like, well, you had an extra half page, why didn't you use it? So it's just one of these things that, a polished paper usually uses the last inch. Okay, and then after that, there's all this bibliography information, which usually doesn't count against the page limit, so it goes over. Depending on the conference, there's some things that kind of go over the last page that don't count. And so for this conference, it was like some disclaimers, some acknowledgments, stuff like this. Usually in peer review, you wouldn't have an acknowledgment section. You've got to keep it anonymous. Right? Makes sense? And so now that's one style of paper. Here's another style of paper. So this the other style of paper here. This is This is a paper that's organized around analysis instead of organized around introducing a method. And so the paper has a little bit different flavor. So I've noticed that my students' papers sort of come in these two categories. So some of the papers are like, I'm going to teach you how to do a thing. And then some of the other papers are like, well, I'm going to study a thing and we'll see what there is to find out about it. Or I've discovered some phenomenon and I'm going to talk about this phenomenon. And it's not like a method. And so even though it's about this, you can see that the sections are very similar to the other paper. So because it's like a new thing that he's looking into, he doesn't have a special background method. He's not like other methods to do this or like this. There's some new thing. And so he has a method section, but the method section is a little bit of an introduction of his terms of like how to even talk about the thing that he's going to observe, right? And so he is like he really goes in and teaches, what leads you to think about this thing, how to formulate it, what you do to kind of measure it. And then his experiment section goes and looks at this phenomenon in like four or five different ways. And or I have three bullets here. So he looks at it in three major different ways. So through some extra things, and then at the end he says, okay, now that I brought you on this journey, here's other stuff you should know related to work and discussion. Right? And so this is, oh, I think this is an ICLR. So this is a single column format, but you can kind of see what this looks like. So short introduction, no related work, just into the motivating observation and the method. And then after he describes what it is he's going to be looking at with you, he goes and he tries to look at it in several different ways and then describes what he's seeing. And then along the way, as he's doing it, he's trying to build this picture of what this is that he's found, and that keeps the discussion short again. So it's like different from like a science or nature paper where the discussion section might be long and tries to describe the concepts. Usually, in like a NURBS paper, you try to describe the concepts along the way as you go, or maybe it's the introduction. It talks about it. So that's just a couple papers to give a sense. So let's talk about the introduction. Introduction versus what's the difference between an introduction and an abstract? What's the difference between an introduction and an abstract, you guys? So anybody? Yes.
Amount of words to use.
What'd you say?
The amount of words to use.
The amount of words to use. Which one would have more words?
Introduction.
Introduction has more words. So introduction seems to be longer. Yeah, usually introduction's longer, usually abstract shorter. It's probably not the right way to think of it. I mean, you could have a very short introduction that does its job very briefly, and it could be very good, even if it's shorter than the abstract.
Introduction could start with defining a problem and move forward with what is going on.
I think that's closer. So what's the purpose of an abstract and what's the purpose of an introduction? Maybe the way I should ask the
Actually,
question.
summarizes the entire paper.
The abstract summarizes the whole paper. That's right.
Yeah.
And then what's the purpose of an introduction?
My advisor always told me about put your puzzle end in the beginning.
But the puzzle,
Yeah.
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, people will say, so the introduction is maybe the most important part of the paper. But the funny thing about it is that in the introduction, at least according to the standard form, you're not supposed to answer the puzzle. Right? You're supposed to present the puzzle. And then, not every introduction is like that. Some introductions answer the puzzle at the same time, right? But the job of the introduction is to make sure that the reader knows what is the puzzle, what is the question that is being asked. And that's his job. And like Ted Ellison would say, and why you care about it. Like, okay, this is a puzzle, I don't care. No, it should be like this motivational thing to say, well, here's a grand puzzle, but why you, your reader should care. And now the abstract is different. The abstract is supposed to summarize the document for a bunch of different purposes, But the abstract is not necessarily supposed to be that motivational, well-written, right? The abstract is really just supposed to tell you everything that's in the paper. And so if you look at a standard abstract, it'll literally just march through the sections of the paper. Okay, so, you know, we do this, you know, it's one sentence summary of the introduction, right? Then, you know, it's related to that one sentence summary of the literature review. You know, to do this, we use this method, you know, one or two sentence summary of like the methods. And then we conduct this experiment, that experiment, the other experiment, the other experiment. And then, you know, our conclusion is that this, and that's like an abstract. And it's almost like digesting every section of your paper down to like a sentence or two, right? And it's usually very boring, but what's the abstract good for? It's really important in the peer review process because somebody is going to have to like assign your paper to be reviewed by somebody, and they're like, okay, so like what's in this paper? Like, yeah, maybe the puzzle is something I could read your introduction and see it, but the method that you use is some weird diffusion model method or something. Like, oh, we need to have like a reader who knows that method, who would be a good reviewer for it. So your abstract and your related work, so there's a couple sections that actually kind of determine who's going to review your paper. Even though it's like all these machine learning systems that are, you know, sending your paper off to review now, it's the same thing. Like one of the functions of a bunch of this front matter in the paper is to decide who it is that peer reviews it. So something to think about. Okay, so the introduction, but you're right. The introduction must ask the main question that the paper addresses. Oh, this is actually an interesting point because the introduction has to ask the question. But then once you're done with your paper, and it's easy to make this mistake, you need to double check that this question is actually answered by the paper too. You know, so you want to make sure the question is really interesting and important. But then if you make it too interesting and too important, then you might realize, oh, actually, that's too interesting. That's like beyond what our paper actually answers. And so you need to scope the question properly so that when the reader gets to the end, they're like, oh, yeah, just as promised. You know, you promised that you're going to ask this question and investigate it. And just like you said you would, here it is. And that's like a satisfying paper to read. Sense? Okay, so here's a couple introductions, I guess, what I do. Yeah, see? Like, here's me, here's one of my papers. I'm like following this rule. Where does a large language model store its facts? Question mark. It's like, if the first sentence of the introduction is a question, then you're probably following this rule. You know, at least as long as it's the question that's answered by the paper. So that's nice page 80. Yeah. And so this is a function vector paper from Eric. Since the study of the lens calculus, 1936, citation from 1936. So okay, maybe people have been interested in this for 100 years, right? Blah blah blah. You know, in this paper we report evidence that autoregressive transformers trained on large develop a Rubenoid form of function references. So it's a little different from posing a puzzle. It's a little bit answering it right away, but it does, you know, serve this function. It says, you know, there's this idea of function references that people have been studying for a long time. Here's why you should care about it. And here, if you read this paper, then we'll resolve the puzzle for you for like how function references might show up in big language models. So more advice from different people. Jim Kaya. Says, you know, the most important thing about the paper from his point of view is it's got to be easy to read. You know, this poor academic stuff. So who here has, like, been doing peer review for different things? Like, you know, peer review, Bison, peer review, whatever. Right. So you know, it's one of the terrible duties of an academic to go, you know, do peer review for other people. You know, you get a pile of 10 papers, you got to read and you got to kind of grade each one. And so, at least it's when you're going through the peer review process, but even afterwards, right, you have to sort of take pity on the readers. You might have this incredibly dense amount of information that you want to convey, and you write really, really complicated prose to like convey every single detail. But like, the peer reviewer is just trying to understand your paper and trying to figure out whether it's good or not, right? And so they're trying to figure out what is the problem you're solving. Is it interesting? Is it new? Is it cool? Right? And it's easy to make a mistake of writing too much and losing track of these core things. And so that where the reviewer or your future reader, past reviewers, reads the paper and can't figure out what it's about, whether it's new, exactly what you're doing, because you have so many thoughts in your head and you're getting them all out, right? And so prioritize your thoughts, and like this is a nice priority list of the stuff that you just have to make sure you're doing. Make sense? You guys are all brilliant. Reading your papers as people go through the PhD and people have like brilliant things that they do in their introductions. Oh, let me teach you a little bit of ancient Greek history. Let me teach you a little there's these brilliant things to do that can make a paper a lot of fun to read. But you have to be careful because you need to like, kind of do your work, right? You have to make it really clear, really easy to understand these things first, right? And so his advice is not only do you have to do these things well, but it should be the first thing that you do. You should do it up front. In other words, like you have to write a really, really good introduction. That's these things, and it's be the first thing that people read. Right. Okay, so that's the connection. So stating the problem and the concept, context is important. Beyond that, right? The common thing about like what makes it interesting is that there are implications of what you're investigating. And if you can clarify the implications, then it makes it clear to people why your paper is interesting. So this is like a key technique to use, especially you guys are coming in with concepts from left field, or you're going to be interdisciplinary. You say, hey, I'm going to study the concept of XYZ. Computer science reader, take a look at my paper, and you might have to explain to them like why XYZ is important, what the implications are if you find one thing out or another, and be explicit about it. So like yes, the implications are obvious to you, right? But if they're not obvious to your reader, then they're going to be like, I don't know why somebody studied this. So they'll have empathy for your point of view, but you have to explain your point of view. Yeah. My students call this the so what problem. Yeah, so what? So imagine the reviewer saying, so what? So what? I'll tell you, so what? Right? Oh, who knows who Donald Knuth is? Donald Knuth. He always has a funny perspective. And look, and here's Knuth with his advice, with his own custom font that doesn't work well on PowerPoint, right? Knuth is famous for making custom everything. And so, but he says that not only should you pay attention to the first paragraph, the first section of your paper, but the first paragraph is super important. And not only is the first paragraph super important, like the first sentence is really important. And so Knuth would advise that you should really scrutinize that first sentence that you did. We'll do that exercise in a minute. So here's some of his advice. He says, it should be an active sentence. It should get to the point. So he says it's really bad for it to be a passive sentence. An important method for internal sorting is quicksort. And he says, you should say quicksort is an important method for internal sorting, right? So like don't write in a weak way in the first sentence. Be direct, right off the bat. It's sort of his suggestion. And so okay, so you guys submitted things. I'm gonna pick on one. I'll pick on my own student. So Grace submitted this thing. Okay. So Here's like an exercise. So Grace says that she did this introduction exercise by feeding her notes into Opus and pasting it in. And so this is what Opus wrote for an introduction. And the question is, which is, I think it's fine, but then you need to ask this question that I'm asking on the right, which is, can we write better than Opus? Think we can? So, I don't know. Opus is a pretty good writer. What do you say?
For humanity's sake, I hope so.
I hope so. I hope so. Right. So, like, can we write better than Opus? Yes. Let's try. Let's try. Well, so this the font here. I had to make the font small because Opus is very tireless. It's like happy to write lots and lots of words, right? So I squeeze down and say, take a minute to read it and think about this. And so I want you to pose to me. Let's do the Donald Knuth exercise. What should be the first sentence here? What should be the first sentence? I'd be very interested to see what you guys come up with. I have my things, but I wanna see what you guys think.
Would be a question.
Okay.
And
Yeah, what would you what might you say?
What will happen when discrepancy is a kind of improved phenomena kind of thing?
What does it mean? Okay, think about it. Yes. Yes.
How about in the lines of is your LLM aligned to you?
Is your so you could say is your LLM aligned to you?
Lying to you.
Or is your LLM lying to you?
Intent, like
Yes, I like the directness of that question, except that the main thing that I would caution you about, and you need like context to be able to criticize it in this way, is that LLM deception is a huge question. It's like a huge area of like, oh, is your LLM lying to you? That includes a lot of other types of lying besides this type.
okay.
And so if you so you could start your paper off with that, but then you wanna fit with that other advice I gave you, right? Which is it does need to ask an interesting question. That is a very interesting question. But it has to be a question that your paper answers, right? And so if you so is your LLM lying to you is a little bit too broad for this paper because it's studying a specific kind of lying, right? And or something, a certain specific kind of behavior. So I would probably not use that sentence. Does
It
that make
sounds like
sense? Like that's
the
what I
way
would do.
a news reporter would cover your paper.
Is your LLM lying to you? Yeah, that's more of a news. That's more like a headline. That's something that like Rupert Murdoch would put on the top of your paper, and then you read, you open the Wall Street Journal, and you're like, it's like it, the headline lied to me. It's not what the article is about. But Rupert would be like, well, you bought the paper, didn't you? It's like, I guess I did. And so there's a little bit of this going on. You want to avoid that because you have to go through two rounds. You're not just getting somebody to read your paper. You have to get through the peer reviewers first. And the peer reviewers are like, this is false advertising. You know, and they will really say this. This is actually one of the most common ways of getting a paper rejected. It says where people say, you didn't support the claims in your paper. Right? Oh, you claimed to be asking or answering the question, did your LLM lie to you, but you didn't actually do that. Any other ideas? Yeah. Grace, you're not allowed to say anything because it's your writing. This is your fault.
Yeah, it's my fault. To clarify, it's much shorter than the list of bullet points that I fed in
Oh,
to
okay.
it.
Oh, so you
So
actually took it down.
it did
It
distill
just
a
did
lot.
that. That's okay. Yeah. It's interesting, all right. Yeah. Any other ideas? I'm covered.
Combination of what they argue, the third. And
So the
we
third sentence. So can you read tell me which
that
words? Yeah, we argue.
sycophancy
We
argue.
argue that sycophancy has not been rigorously characterized, or something like that. Like, do you like this sentence?
Yeah, but the person doesn't know, maybe they don't know what sycophancy
Yeah, they maybe don't know what it is. It's hard. It's a hard job you have on that first sentence. What the heck can you do?
Right.
Because they need to understand what it is. But I agree with you. This is a like this sentence is appealing because it describes what you're trying to do. But then it has the problem that it doesn't explain what it is. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like you could do the, you know, clickbait first thing where you're like,
yes.
Is your LLM lying
to you?
Please you?
Oh, to please you, yes. Okay, yes. Yes.
Sycophants, past work on sycophants, he would suggest.
Okay.
Yes.
So you could immediately follow it up with.
And then.
With
but
a,
they didn't differentiate the user level kind of sycophancy and its own. Now people read.
Yeah, but I think that's right. You can have a pair of sentences. So you're not, you know, that first sentence doesn't stand alone. So if you come in right away with your caveats, you know, as long as the caveats are interesting to read,
yeah.
Then you can rescue the first sentence before the
probably what I want to do if I was, I know I'm supposed to be about it now, but uh-huh. I would probably try to get a like quote from one of the past like popular anthropic papers about sycophancy where they suggest like it's trying to blog your part, like it all like have some sentence where, like
yes.
This is the
quote the thing,
but like is this in the anthropomorphic like
yes
yeah.
And anthropicization.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could use a quote to give context, and that helps make it so that I'm not saying the crazy things. I said the crazy things. Yeah. Any other ideas? Like, okay, you guys. What would you pick for the first sentence?
What about like a historical anecdote? So something like during the Great Leap Forward, Mao's officials told him exactly what he wanted to hear, and like 30 million people died for it. Well, I'm just saying, like sometimes it's like illustrative. You're like, look, like yes men bring down countries. Like, I don't know.
You're better than Rupert Murdoch. This is gonna sell some papers. No, I think this is. I like it. I think that that's. I think it's great because it communicates why you're interested in it. But then I think that you right after you do that, you do have to do the thing that Grace talks about. You have to sort of rescue this.
Yeah, of course.
And that makes sense. Yes,
I think that maybe uh-huh. when we could put it as well as like basically like the way that you deal with problematic behavior depends
yes.
on the root cause of it.
Yes.
And so
yes.
like, if someone is lying to you because they're you know, a 4-year-old that wants more candy,
yeah.
or if they're lying to you because they're, you know, a ruthless sociopath,
yeah.
like, you know, these are different. And so we can say that, like, people have documented this behavior,
yeah.
but have not actually tried to look at the psychology of
it. So as a writing exercise... Right. You see a few different approaches here. So, you know, one of the approaches is if the job is to ask a question, you just ask the question up front. And then you can, and then while we're asking questions, you can sex it up. You can be like, you know, so you want to kill 500,000 people? Right. You know, kind of thing. Right. So, you know, you can ask the question, but then there's a second job that you're trying to do in the introduction, which is make sure that the reader understands your scope. They understand there's this tension between the broad, expansive question that you want to ask and the narrow scope of like what you're actually going to be able to do in these 8 pages. And we're navigating between them. And you see that there's these two ways that introductions are often written, which is doing one and then the other, or the other and then the one. And they're both fine, right? You know, it's a style choice for the specific paper of what you might do. It's like, oh, let me tell you the big question. Oh, and well, you know, here's my scope. Or let me introduce a little bit of scope. And then this, you know, once you have the scope, here's the question that you might want to know. And so the problem that I have with what Opus wrote here, like personally, is that It like mixed up scope and context. You know, it mixed up, the scope and the question in this big paragraph, which is mostly scope. It's mostly about scope, but also like talks a little bit about the question, like hints at the question in there, but not totally clear, right? And then before, like, so see these three words in this work, blah, blah, blah. So as a reviewer, as when you see, when you're like reading a paper that's kind of wordy and not that well written, right? You like skip, 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 and then you're flipping pages, and oh look, on page three, finally, like in this work, right? And then you're like, ah, now I can read like what the heck this paper is about, right? That makes sense, because they're just like they had too much they want to get it out of their head, and so Opus here has too much, it's trying to get it out of their head. Grace gave Opus 53 bullet points, and like Opus is like, okay, I better like talk about all that stuff. Like, my head is full of this stuff, and then finally it says, in this work is what's going on, but like this, so like in concept, whatever job this sentence is doing, or this paragraph is doing, like that could be the first sentence, except that like this, the way that Opus is constructed it here, has like totally depended on this paragraph. So, but you could imagine like writing this paragraph in some way that it could stand alone, and that could like that's a good first sentence, or it could be a good sentence, second sentence, and that's sort of the way that I think of it. So, you want to see what I wrote? What would you say, you guys? What would your first sentence be? Okay, we'll do this in a minute. So I have a couple attempts here. But I did the thing that you guys suggested. I said, oh, let's ask a question up front. I'll see if that works. So I said, are LLMs being deceptive when they act as sycophants, or are they just getting confused? Right. So I try to do two things in that same sentence. I don't know if it's successful, right? Which is, I'm asking the question that you're asking. Is your LLM lying to you? But I'm trying to scope it down at the same time. I'm trying to scope it down. I'm trying to say, okay, I'll take this word sycophantic and stick it in there. It wasn't quite the right word form for the sentence I was constructing, so I said it a different way, right? But maybe close enough that people know that I'm talking about sycophancy. And then, when I digest what was going on in the first paragraph about what the contrast is of what's doing it, I say, oh, actually, it's like an either or. It's like, are they being sycophantic and kind of deceptive to you? Or is it just like they're just messing up? They're just getting confused, right? And so I feel like if that's the main argument, you can kind of put it up front and say, this is what we're going to try to distinguish between. And then you have to like say something. Oh, look! And then this is the thing that this is the thing that Grace says that you should do. The appearance of sycophantic behavior has been widely observed with quote 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 quote. I don't know what quotes, but like I could, you could do a little literature review and say, oh, Anthropic says this and that, right? And then you could cite somebody and say, this is why you care, right? And actually, it's users to assume this, and so this is why Anthropic cares. Maybe this is why you care, right? So, like, we're gonna do this. This is why you should care. Everybody cares about it. So, don't accuse me of doing a piece of research nobody cares about. I've proved to you twice in the first paragraph somebody cares about it, and then I do the thing that like I didn't like, which is I have this in this paper thing, and a little too late in the second paragraph. Here we go. In this paper, we present whatever based on this, and we do this, right? So, but this is the job. So this in this paper sentence is the one that's doing the job of telling you like what the paper's about, what the puzzle, the core puzzle is that you're solving, or something like that. But this is my first attempt at a rewrite. It's fewer words, right? And kind of see, right? And then after I wrote this, and I was like, ah, I don't know. And then you edit it again, right? And so here's my second attempt that you can see. And I just deleted all the stuff in between this, and I said, okay, you should just get to in this paper. So I take the in the paper sentence and just shove it up as far as I can. And so the first, I don't know, I thought the first sentence was okay. I might have removed a couple words, but like, okay, our LLMs being deceptive. And then we say, in this paper, we present evidence that AI secrecy might not arise from this, but from that, or something like that. And then now this is like, okay, I'm going to prove this, right? Just like as quickly as you can, you just like get to the point. You might not agree with me, but in the next 8 pages, I'm going to argue, or something like this. Right? That makes sense? Yeah. So you see how much I deleted? Yeah. And then you say, okay, and then an introduction, and then you might be like, okay, then I can actually scope it more. I can say, in this to say this, we begin with this, I'm gonna define how we're gonna ask a question. Right? So this is a little bit of giving away the game, but it's an analysis paper. So you have this question. So in a methods paper, you probably don't want to start with this. So like in a methods paper, you don't want to say, in this paper, we're going to prove that our method is the best method since all methods have ever been invented. Like we're the best. Like you wouldn't say that in the introduction, right? Because that's a little bit of a puzzle. In this paper, we ask, is there a better way of doing this method? There's some indication this should be a good way. So there's this nice thing that you can do. We bring this idea and that idea together to bring our method together. And then later on, we ask, is this any better? Right? And then you can answer that in the rest of the story. But in an analysis paper, which I think this is like an analysis paper, then I think that the answer to your puzzle is the analysis itself. So you state your hypothesis. You say, hey, I'm going to say this controversial thing that you might not even think is measurable. Like, does an AI really believe what it says? Right? And then you're like, that's not even a scientific question. Right? How do you do it? And then you're like, so we think we can answer that. We're going to do this. We're going to probe this. We're going to look at that. We're going to change this. I think that we're going to try to get a signal on whether an LM believes what it says or something. Right? And then how that all rolls out is like the interesting meat of the paper. And so you can kind of think like, what's the interesting thing that you're answering? It might not literally be the answer to the question, right? Makes sense. Okay, and then you hold that back. Okay, so your turn. So let's do this. Okay, everybody, gonna do this. So this is the URL. So if you go to the course website and click on the link that says, I forget what it's called, like interactive, editing thing, and do these 5 steps. Will you do these 5 steps? So it's a spreadsheet. Put your name in column one to claim a random piece of writing. Don't put your name next to your own. Until all the rows are full. If you didn't submit one, it's okay. You can put your name next to one anyway, but just make sure all the rows are full. If there's an empty row claim, and if all the rows are already full, then great. You can put your name. You can put a second name next to one. And then take the text out and copy it out to a Google Doc so that you just write like, in a regular Google Doc. And then think about what is the first sentence. What's the best first sentence? Your comment might be that this is already a brilliant first sentence and I want to change it. It's okay. But like really think about this question. What do you think is the best first sentence, the first two or three sentences of this thing? And then make a shot at editing the document to just write what you think would be the best, like the most banger first sentence for the paragraph that you picked. Right? Or the first, it could be a few sentences. And then once you're done, so just think about that for 10 minutes. Once you're done, paste your suggestion back. And then I'll call time in 10 minutes. So relax, guys, and work on it. And then we will reveal whose thing you edited. Go find who edited your thing. These are intros, right? So these are not abstracts. Now that you know the difference between an intro and an abstract.
Yeah, so if you haven't put pasted your thing, your suggestion into the spreadsheet, take a minute to do that now.
You take the sentence that you've written or on your notes and paste them into the third column. And give me a minute to do that. And once you're done with that, I want you to find the piece of writing that you wrote, submitted last night or the other night, and find who it is who's been editing your thing. And go find them and ask them, "My God, what have you done to my writing?" Right? Will you do that? Yeah, and go and just chat, and then chat a little bit about the sentence and about thoughts. Yeah, like actually stand up. Everybody stand up.
But are people going to be going
What?
to like
Oh,
the
yes. Okay,
conversation?
yes. So it's a little bit chaotic. So try to find who wrote your thing, and then if they're already talking to somebody, then wait until somebody wants to chat with you. Sorry, there's probably multiple cycles of people, but I think that we could probably do it about two rounds.
I think 10
Yes.
minutes, and there's no easy way to define it.
There's no easy way to divide it. Because we did it in this chaotic way. We could go down the list. So who was the who had their thing edited by, Avery? Who was like the first on the list? I don't know who that was. Come back to Avery. And who was the second on the list? Supposed to say. Oh, just talk
It
just
was
just Avery.
second on the list is me.
Oh, it was you. Oh, okay, sorry. You're online. So what you can do is you can log into the Zoom and chat. Who was so you were the so Emery edited yours, right? So maybe Emery can like log into the Zoom and then chat with you a little bit. I can mute the Zoom so that you're not talking out loud. Or what you can do is you can put in the Zoom chat just have a maybe your own Zoom that you can use to chat with Emery.
Oh, yeah, I can do that.
That's great. Thanks. Down the list. So let's basically all I want you to do is just talk about like what why you chose a different first sentence, what might be missing, that type of thing. Does this really capture what's needed? Just for 5 minutes. Nobody's talking. Oh, okay. Should we keep on going down the list? Who is Yu Chen edited one? Where's Yu Chen?
I'm
Oh,
here.
yeah. So yeah. Go talk to whoever yours is from. And then Claire edited one, but you are you talking, so you talking for a
Oh,
minute.
Jess.
Grace edited the next one. So
I
who
noticed
wrote the one
quite
that Grace
a few
edited?
people taking this start.
Or maybe what we should do is we should like you can reveal who you were that I deleted. Should I find that? I can find it. I have it in another spreadsheet. Should I just put whoever it was so that you guys can find each other? All right. Let me go do that. Sorry. I shall reveal.
Formula, right? We show that maybe it does answer this question, or at least helps
Okay. Oh. No, wrong one.
something.
Okay, now you know who you should talk to.
Original, right? Oh, there it is. Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
That's the same. That was it.
That's
The first two
obvious.
sentences is what I was.
Yeah, that's what I did too.
And then I just started writing.
Or
I
you
say
already have
anything.
your own special list.
No, I don't. I'm
Nice.
not.
Nice.
Oh.
Oh, that's okay. We didn't.
I used to.
Do,
Oh, you
we didn't do
is Jen
my math
online?
today.
Oh,
I'm good. I'm good.
Oh.
I
guess
not.
And then you can. So
around the
if Jessen is online, then.
Wait,
that's
how
the
many?
page.
Or you can look for the opposite.
Yeah,
I just sweat in yours.
Kind of.
What's the kind of rep where you have people like
trying to make rounds in Canada?
Find it.
Technically, I think they are your. They are very similar cases.
Yeah. So,
in
potato.
Yes, you know, I was supposed to be famous candidate, however, it's not a candidate.
No, I
actually
have been to
the Yeah, sort of. Kind of minor. And I'm just making sure that I think is a strange name. I don't think you can do somebody else from it. I guess what I'm trying to say is I tried to pull out the things I thought you wrote, especially as it gets further down.
But I put this question as
That's okay. No, I realized like after this class, I need to definitely go. And also, like, we are not okay.
Investors in manufacturing costs is too great.
My advisor always says to write the introduction last, like write everything else, and then once you have realized that they are that situation, then go back.
I'm going to just change this to determinations. And that's the word you use. Actually, you might for now, you might, you know, I pulled the word investors look at a company's earnings call as a determinant and then assistant. So then I seamlessly write, I call them decisions. All I've done now is I think about our second investment decisions and change it to
I'm
I say, oh, and I can tell you that great other scenarios in the entire show position. I go to the bar, the headphones, and I go, you, so if you're doing this, you're going to want to do it. You're going to want to stay there. Thursday. So now that you get the idea, you know, on Thursday, so who here thinks that it needs to be a little more organized than what I did? Okay, so I will organize it a little bit better. So I'll like maybe make a spreadsheet of like rounds of like who talks to who on which round and stuff like that. So it's a little bit clearer. But to give me some ingredients, I want to try it on paper. So that it's sort of physical. So come, you know, come if you can in person to class and bring things in paper. If you're stuck on Zoom, then, you know, put them on Google Docs, it's fine, right? But like, I'd like to see if we can, we'll just try it on paper just for one round. We'll probably go back to Google Docs after this, right? But I think it's a nice exercise. Okay. So, all right. So that's introduction and you get the idea, right? So, okay, so let me talk about the rest of the sections of the paper, because when you write your thing for Thursday, I want you to write a little bit of this type of stuff as well, right? So so after you talk about introduction and actually talk about related work, you talk about you talk about the background and the method. So this is where we teach. So one of the things that I always tell my students is that research is teaching. Research is teaching. Research is not just discovery, right? Research is teaching. There's, you know, it's not just that Columbus went to find North America or something, that he came back and wrote all these books about it. That's why it's so amazing. You know, if he had just gone there and hung out there and retired, then it like wouldn't have been as amazing. And so so don't just go and do your discovery and go and hang out and retire. You're going to teach it. And so this is where the teaching happens in the background of the method section. It's like where the technical details are taught. And so so why is this thing covering my slide? But it's but the idea here is, where's my mouse?
Not here. Love these computer systems. Set up professional audio. Great, thanks. It's like an advertisement. Okay. Okay. So this is like a typical section and like paragraph in a method section. Blah 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 blah. Right. So the thing that you want to do, like if you have an equation of any technical material, one Greek letter, right? One formula, anything, it doesn't matter. Like you have some numbers, right? To have pity on your reader, take some time and make a figure that explains the technical idea. Like if you were trying to teach your idea to an undergrad, who's like, hey, come and join my project. And the undergrad's like, I don't get it, I don't get it, I don't get it, right? Then you would probably take your whiteboard marker, and you'd probably draw something on the whiteboard to help them understand it. So draw that for your core reader. Right? Take some time and draw a nice figure that explain what's going on. And so there's some secrets for making a nice figure, right? But if there's a lot of different figures you can always make for a paper. There's a lot of different ones, and so but a really good figure for like a figure one serves as a conceptual map. The paper, and there's a lot of different things that you can do in a really good figure to help out a paper, right? Like you have to have empathy with your reader and think about all the weird jargon that you're using that like is natural to you, but to a new reader they won't like understand what that word is. So if there's any words like that, it's like my blah 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 sophisticated awesome data set, my R3, user, group, my whatever, right? Like if there's any jargon, it should be on the figure. Like with the jargon on the figure, like next to like the arrow or the box that jargon like indicates. Like don't like use jargon in the paper and then not put it in the figure. The whole point of the figure is to make it easier to understand your jargon. So the jargon should be here too. So like all these crazy Greek letters, like there's a good figure because all the Greek letters are on the paper, on the figure. Like they're in here. Like you might still not understand them, but at least they're in the figure, so you can point at them. And if you see them in the paper and you don't understand what's going on, then and you're puzzling over it, at least when you're puzzling, you can stare at this figure and wonder, like, why is this Greek letter here, right? And it's next to some arrow and whatever. Does that make sense? And so that's sort of the thing. And then there's like little keys, so like. This Greek letter means this. This Greek letter, those little pictures, right? So, like, all the jargon is supposed to be here. Some of the jargon is in English. Oh, this method is called ESD method. This method's called the whatever, so there's English in here, right? Okay, so that's my suggestion. Is and you can also think of it as so like every major concept, ideally would be in a good figure, and then you can also think of it as sometimes. A figure is like actually a map of the paper. If you have like three major things you're doing in the paper, sometimes a figure will have like three sections in it that correspond to the three things you did. But think of it as like a map, not just as, a picture. And okay, so Bill Freeman says that when you're teaching something difficult technically, what he likes to do is he likes to start with a simplified setup. Is it especially important? If you've worked on your method for a whole year, and then by the end of it, your method is like really good, but it's a little complicated. And so, if you just start off by like hitting somebody with like the complicated form of your method, they'd be like, "Oh my God, what is this?" It's like you have to deal with all these rounding error problems, right? It's like this whole method is about rounding errors. No, what if it's not, right? What if the rounding errors are just to get the last 5% of performance, and actually the core of the method is something else? So Bill says, you can take some time in your method section to introduce the simple version of your thing. Like maybe even a toy problem. Maybe even like don't solve the real problem yet. Like consider what happens in this toy thing. Look at how this simple thing works. If you do your writing well, you can sometimes, describe the simplified toy question that you're asking in a couple paragraphs. And then you can ask a question, what happens if you take this toy thing and then do it on a full scale experiment. So that's like one technique. And so these are all examples of
papers that have been published recently that use toy examples to start off with, which I liked a lot. And so okay, so those are the couple of things that I would suggest about your methods thing. And then separate your methods from experiments. So your method section is the section where you're teaching all the concepts, so that if a reader is like, I don't get it, they're going to go back to that section. And then your experiment section is a little bit of the section for readers who are like, I don't believe it. Right? That makes sense. And there's where you're defending your paper with your experimental evidence. And then there, so there, you're a little bit nerdier. You're like, okay, this is exactly how we measured it, and exactly what we did, exactly what we saw. You're very neutral. You're like, I'm not trying to hide anything from you. You know, I just tell you all the facts, right? So this is a classic science paper section of it, and you know, it's important. Like, you have to have convincing evidence, and you have to be very forthright about what's going on there. And there's a little bit of teaching going on as you go through there, but you know, most of your conceptual teaching is done by the time you're done with your method section. And so the key thing to think about when you're doing experiments is triangulation. So you're the what you want to avoid is like an experiment section that has five different experiments, and each experiment like wanders to like a different part of the continent. And like, let's take a look at this experiment, looks over here, and then, oh, there's this other interesting thing, this experiment looks over here. And there's this other interesting thing, and this experiment looks over here. So what you would we'd rather have as a field for your experiments is, here's the thing that we're interested in right here. This is the spot in the introduction. It says we're interested in this question, and we have five experiments. One experiment looks at it like this way, and then the other experiment is like over here, and we look at the same spot, like over here this way. You can see a different thing. And then here's our third experiment. Our third experiment looks over here. And then once you get like to the third experiment and you look at the same phenomenon like the third way, people start to get convinced. They're like, well, I don't know. I didn't know if I believed the first experiment, but the second one's kind of surprising because you looked at the same thing. Now, the third one, oh, I can't, like, it's hard to deny. There's something going on here. And then you hit them and you're like, no, there's a fourth way. You can look at the fourth thing, there's a fifth thing. And then if you do that, and then you step in there and you do that and you throw it into the air and it does something else, then it also happens. And people are like, wow, that's crazy, right? And then they're convinced. That's like what a good experiment section feels like. Does that make sense? So it's not just like a tour of the British Museum, right? That makes sense. And then after you've done that, hopefully you've wowed your reader. They're like, oh, there's really something here. Then you just write a very brief, humble conclusion section that says, well, this paper proposed that you could figure this thing out. We introduced this method that you used to figure this out. We did some experiments. It turns out that you can figure it out. It works. You know, this probably has some implications for future science. And that's it. That's your conclusion. Make sense? And that's sort of the social form here. So you know, you might point out what the implications are of your work. But just very briefly. Make sense? Don't make a big deal about it. So Bill says that this is very common for like first year students. Don't do it. Future work. So you know, in your conclusions, you're like, okay, here's like what we did. Future work. Here is like future stuff that we're also going to do. Right? Never put future work in your paper. Never write it down. There's like so many problems with future work. So one like it's so like if you're in a competitive area, like everybody's trying to like make a cool new method, then your future work reads like this. It reads also oh, it reads, okay, here's a list of all the things that we wish we could do, but we didn't have time, we like ran out of time. Right? And so the reviewers are like, huh, yeah, why didn't you do that? I think I'm gonna reject it because you didn't do that thing. It's just like a list for all the reasons a reviewer should reject you. It's like, why are you listing this out for the reviewer? Right? Or it's like, oh, here's a like we did all the good stuff, but there's even more ambitious stuff you should do if you're reading it. Here's a list of good ideas that you should go and steal from us now. and you do it before we get a chance to do it. It's like, why are you doing this to your research competitors? It's like, please do this for us, right? You know, it's like there's a couple, you know, functions that, you know, future work, you know, serves, and neither one of them is really in your interest, and neither one of them is really of interest to most readers, right? Like, the readers don't want to be told what they should be doing in the future. They're going to figure that out for themselves. Unless you have a really great idea and then you can steal it from them. Yeah, I don't know. Don't write future work, right? If you read the paper, so write a paper to be read like 10 years from now. It's really weird to go read, like, if you wrote an important paper and then somebody went to read it 10 years later and there's like a future work section, it's no longer future work, right? Like, maybe that happened, or maybe it did. I know, it's weird, right? So no matter what happened, it's like, it's weird. Like, you wouldn't read the paper to read the thing that happened in the future. You'd read the future paper, right? And you also, but then also, you know, maybe the future didn't happen the way that you imagined. And then there's this weird anachronism. Future work, this is like what they thought was going to happen in the future, didn't work out that way at all. It's like very strange. Like, don't write this. Make sense? Okay. So just end with the conclusion or summary. Just say a few words. Don't write a lot in your conclusion. That's my rule of thumb. And don't worry too much about it. Okay, so as you write your things for Thursday, a couple of general tips. Could it here respond to get? Perhaps the most important principle of good writing is to keep the reader uppermost in mind. Yeah, what does a reader know so far? Okay, so actually, you know, so there's a couple things about this introduction that I want to cover, because there's a thing that's my own personal beef that's not really here on one of these slides. So what people are saying here is they're saying, you know, be kind to your reader. So the hardest thing about writing after you've worked on a technical project for a few months is to have empathy to the reader who hasn't thought about it as long as you have, right? And so it's like a guest coming into your house. And, you know, like, for example, in my house, I've got this toilet that doesn't quite work right. And I know that it doesn't work right. But if I don't have empathy for my guests, then when they come and use that toilet, then they'll be like, oh, no, I'm here in the bathroom and I can't figure out how to use the toilet, whatever. Right? So I realized, oh, this is one of the things that I have to explain. And your paper is kind of the same way, right? You know, there's all these things about your technology. And if a reader needs to understand it, then you should try to have empathy and explain it upfront. So it's like, oh, would you like the towels? And, oh, by the way, you know, let me show you how to get this toilet to work. And then here's the sheets for your bed. And breakfast is served at 6, you know, whatever. That makes sense? And write fewer words. Oh, no, what does Drunk and White say? They said, omit needless words. Oh, they're so much more elegant. But I say just write fewer words. Yes. Okay, yes, we're almost done. So we already did the writing exercise, but here's the suggestion. As I was thinking about all the introductions you guys wrote, there's a really common way of writing the introductions. And like, I would recommend trying to be bold and not writing this way. So in our field, we write these funnel introductions that start like War and Peace. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times, right? It's like, you know, in recent decades, artificial intelligence has grown in importance until it's like taken over the entire world. Like, it's such an important thing, you know. AI is like this big, big thing. It's like important for this. It's important for that. AI is everywhere. There's no avoiding AI. And then you take this funnel and it's like, and then in our town, AI is used everywhere. And in my neighborhood, AI is used everywhere. And then on my street, at my house, right, on my countertop, right here on this table, right here is AI. Right? And then you're like a page into your introduction. And they say, so since AI is right here, we're going to study this, right? And it's like, you don't need that section. You can just say, welcome, reader. Look at this. Cool thing here, we're gonna do this right here on this table. And you can do that in like the first sentence, but it feels very bold to do that. It's like, why would anybody care about my funny little thing on my table? Right? That makes sense? But actually it's refreshing to read it. It's easier to read. It's actually, if you write it well, it's kind of cool. So that's what I would suggest. Like, write your words, get straight to the point. Don't write these big final things. That makes sense? And have empathy for your reader. Okay, so I have more to say later, but write a couple sections of your paper with your team. Bring 5 copies of it on paper on Thursday, and then we'll do more of this. Thanks, everybody. See you Thursday.
Awesome.
The sound is here.
Pretty good.
But,
I'm so sure.